Take me where the promises are real.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm going to ad-lib a little bit. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
Let's have an AA meeting.
All right.
My name is Stephanie, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey,
y'all. Welcome to Monday Night Blue Chip Speakers Mealing at the NABA Club. Where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, with 1 year or more of sobriety, tells his or her story. This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual in our personal stories describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they established their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on the AABlueChipSpeaker.org, desperately in need, will hear our speaker. And we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. Tonight's speaker, Nicole.
I'm Nicole. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is May 9th, 2020. I will preface this by saying I apologize if my baby in the background distracts any of y'all or distracts me and throws me off. So I also cuss a lot, which I will try not to do. I was born in Greenwich Village, New York. I lived in Brooklyn till I was four. My dad and my mom, I remember them fighting a lot. They argued, to my recollection, they argued a lot. My mom had had twins before me from her previous marriage, my brother and my sister, and they are about four years older than me. My dad really jumped into it with marrying somebody that had two kids already from a previous marriage, and I give him a lot of props for that. My brother, sister, and I were aware of my mom and my dad's fighting. And when my mom and my dad decided to separate, my mom is from here, and her mom was here. And if you know my mom, she was going to go back to her mom. So we moved to Atlanta, and my mom and my dad kind of tried to kind of work things out for a little while. Inevitably, it did not work out. And I remember people asking me when I was a kid or even throughout my life, like, you know, how did your parents' divorce affect you? And, you know, were you devastated? And I remember, like, even as a young kid being like, no, like, I was glad, like, I didn't have to be around them fighting anymore. Like, which I, you know, when I would say it then, I didn't realize that that must have been, like, really awkward for people to hear, like a kid to say, and sad. But that's the truth. My parents had come up with a plan where I was going to, my father remained in New York, so I would go visit my dad every summer growing up. There was nothing more in this world that I looked forward to more than going to see my dad. I desperately wanted him to be in Atlanta. I missed him, but he was like, honey, this is New York City. Like, you're a fool if you leave New York City. And I was hurt. I was like, well, why aren't I reason enough to leave, to come to Atlanta for, even though you don't like Atlanta? When I was in seventh grade, there was this boy who really liked me, and he was cute, but he wasn't cute enough for me. And he just adored me and did not secretly adore me. He was very in my face about it. And the summer after seventh grade, he blossomed and became a knockout. And lucky for me, still had a crush on me eighth grade year. We started dating, and we fell in, you know, madly in love. I had to go, you know, I was going to go see my dad for the summer. The thought of being away from your boyfriend for 2 months, like, well, that's not going to happen. So I talked my father into allowing Dustin and his mom to come visit New York. And my dad was dreading it. He was like, I don't want to deal. I don't want to entertain. This is awful. Well, I'm somebody who typically gets what they want. And so they came, and the minute, this was pre 9/11. So we were, you know, you're allowed to go to the gate. And the minute that Dustin's mom, my father saw Dustin's mom, my dad, I can remember it like yesterday. He was like, oh, I like her. and like, that's literally what he said. Then we went to a Chinese restaurant in Chinatown that night. Wohop's, famous Chinese place. And I saw some New York stuff in here, so I'm sure you've heard of it. And Dustin was smoking cigarettes at the time, and we were 14, you know, and we went outside and for him to smoke a cigarette. We went back inside, and we walked in on our parents making out. And we literally saw it and turned right back around, and we were like, what are we going to do? Literally within 3 months, our parents were married. Dustin and I had to enter high school as boyfriend and girlfriend / brother and sister. And I was the girl who was dating her brother. That's who I was. When I say that Dustin and I could not have cared any less, we didn't. We were proud of it. We held our heads high. We were like, we're the ones that introduced them. We were together first, so you guys can all suck it. So, you know, that's where it was. Dustin and I, you know, our relationship ended, and I went from being his girlfriend to his sister, and I was fine with it. I was ready to switch roles immediately from girlfriend to sister, and Dustin was not. He remained in love with me and was very vocal about it. And our parent, my dad and Dustin's mom, my stepmom Bonnie, are still together to this day. Dustin unfortunately died in 2011, December 19th of 2011. So I will get to the impact of that in a moment. I was molested by a stranger when I was 11 years old. It was at a McDonald's, and he followed me from, he molested me at the McDonald's. We tried to catch him before he left. You know, he left in his car, later found out that he slept outside my house that night, and he actually followed us to a roller rink the next day and molested me again. My stepfather, who raised me, who my mom married after my dad, who was hands down the best stepfather that anybody could have ever asked for. I am now a stepmother, and looking back at how he was towards me, he never once made me feel anything other than his. I adore him. Kit actually was at the roller rink that day, and that's my stepdad's name, and I told him that what happened to me the night prior had just happened again, and he chased him down. He tried, you know, this guy tried to run. He caught him, and I think he served something ridiculous like 4 months in jail. And I slept on my parents' floor for a year after that happened to me. I went to a children's therapist for like twice a week for I think a year after it happened. I didn't think for a long time that it affected me until now. I look back and it greatly affected me in so many ways. When I was 17, I hated school, right? I mean, school was just not for me. And even if it was for me, there was no way that I was going to pass math. It just wasn't going to happen. Like, I mean, every other subject I was all right in, but I skipped so much school. But, I mean, I literally was in pre-algebra in 11th grade. I mean, there was just, I was going to be a 27-year-old senior. Like, there was just no way. So I was like, okay, I'm going to drop out and get my GED. My brother, my older brother, one of the twin, was going to Texas Tech in Lubbock, and he had this wild idea to ask my dad and my mom if it would be all right, so, you know, if I moved to Lubbock, because at least I would be hanging around people going to college. The first day that I got there, my brother's like, let's get an eight ball. And I'm like, okay, this is not going to be good. I had no idea what that was. I have no idea. I had, you know, smoked a little pot beforehand, drinking sometimes. Substances weren't really an issue with me. In high school, you know, we all experimented, but nothing was that profound. When I moved to Lubbock is really where the binge drinking started. It was a typical college lifestyle without going to college. I was drinking like I thought a normal college student does, but I was like keeping up with like the football team when it came to drinking. Like it was, I didn't realize it at the time, but I was able to put down a lot. I got a DUI in Lubbock, and my dad was like, well, not paying for you to party and hang out and have a good time anymore, so you're moving back to Atlanta. When I got back to Atlanta, I slowed down on the drinking, and I was kind of at like an even keel. You know, it's not that I didn't drink, I just wasn't drinking to an, you know, excessively. When Dustin died was when it really started to spiral for me. I have always suffered from anxiety, severe anxiety. I remember being a little kid and my parents always telling me, like, you know, like, stop worrying so much. And I didn't realize how bad my anxiety was until I'd gotten older, and I got on, you know, anti-anxiety medication, and they allowed me to be a normal human being, to be able to wake up in the morning, to be able to function, to be able to go to work. I really don't know what I would do if I wasn't put on medication for it. But when Dustin died, that medication was not enough. I wanted to numb myself, and I wanted to not feel life. I started drinking heavily and got caught shoplifting from sushi from Kroger. And I remember being in the car with the cop, and the cop was like, he was like, you know you're going to jail for $8. And I was like, and I know, and I've got like hundreds of dollars in my wallet. And I was like, my father is going to be really upset with me. My dad bailed me out of everything. When I got my DUI in Lubbock, he bailed me out. I'm not only talking about from jail. My dad has bailed me out of a lot. I was bailed out of jail. My dad bailed me out for shoplifting. Still, I didn't think that I had a problem. I just thought that I had bad luck. You know, like, I messed up, let's move on. So I went to CNA school. I have a incredible love for the elderly, and I knew that I wanted to be able to work with them in some way, and I didn't mind doing the dirty work for the elderly that other people would be incredibly grossed out by. I just am not. But after I graduated from CNA school, I thought that I was going to be okay with like being around death, because that's the reality of that industry. But I realized that I was not prepared to be around that, especially after what happened with Dustin, because it was pretty close together. For me, when the drinking started to become heavier and heavier, the promiscuity became heavier. The not remembering how I got home became heavier. Running outside in the morning, wondering if my car was in one piece, if my car was even outside. It was completely out of control. I got contacted by this boy who I knew from elementary school, and we went to elementary school together. We went to the same high school, and I kind of had always kind of like creeped on his Facebook just to see what he was up to, but we were never romantically involved, but we were close in high school, friends, like same circle. He asked me if I wanted to meet up for a drink, and like, I should have seen it as a red flag that like we were both available at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon, like on a Wednesday, you know, but like, and we met at a bar, and I thought that that was like totally fine. No, of course I didn't think that there was an issue. I literally didn't enter my mind. Well, so his name is Josh, and we started dating. It was incredibly tumultuous. we were the kind of people that, like, when we weren't drinking, we really had a fondness for each other, and we had the same likes, and we had the same views, and we had the same, I mean, we were really good friends. But when we drank, it was toxic, and it was a nightmare. We broke up, got back together, broke up, got back together. I had never in my life ever had anybody say to me, "Nicole, I think that you have a problem." It might sound, I've been in these rooms for a while now, and a lot of people's stories are different than mine. You know, they had wrecked so many relationships or have made so many mistakes, and sure, so had I. But it wasn't enough to where people were coming to me, family members, friends, saying, "Nicole, I think you have a problem." I mean, never had this ever once happened to me. And not only that, but I was enabled by family, I was enabled by friends. I worked as a waitress my entire life, so I surrounded myself, you know, in that kind of lifestyle. So everything that I was doing, other people were doing. So I didn't really see a lot wrong with what I was doing. Josh was the first person who, I'd say maybe it was our second date, he said, "I have a drinking problem. And I know that I'm an alcoholic, and I know that I need to stop. I know I need to stop drinking." And I was like, "Why? Like, so much fun, you know." I think a couple dates later, Josh said to me, "I think that you have a drinking problem." And I was like, "No, like, you maybe do, but I've got everything under control." When he said that to me, sure, I was aware enough to say, well, there's got to be some sort of truth to what he's saying. It wasn't enough for me to really want to stop drinking at that point. So that was the first time anybody had ever mentioned to me that I might have a problem. I don't know. My bottom was nothing crazy. I got another DUI, my second DUI, about 5 months before I decided to quit drinking. My bottom wasn't because I had just ruined everything and everything was wrecked and I had lost everything and I had to, it wasn't like that for me. It was, I literally woke up one day and I had a conversation with Josh. We both said, if we want this relationship to really work, which we did, we're like, we're not going to be able to drink anymore. And that was it for me. That was it. I found that quitting drinking was the absolute easiest part of all of this. Josh had been to NABA before, and we had gone to a different couple of other meetings elsewhere, and when we got here, immediately, I was like, I'm home. As cliche as it sounds, I was home. I remember knowing that I needed to get a sponsor. I knew that there was no way that I didn't think that there was a way that I was going to maintain sobriety unless I went through with the steps. And I didn't want to just choose anybody as my sponsor. I'm picky, and I wanted somebody as good as me. And I remember there was this woman who went to the 545 here, and I would hear her share. I would be like, I was like, I want her. But every time, you know, they would say, "Raise your hand if you're willing to sponsor." She never raised her hand, and I was like, I don't want to settle. I don't want to just, you know, get somebody. I want her. And then I remember, it was total God that she raised her hand one day, and it wasn't too far long after I knew I needed a sponsor. And the day that she raised her hand, I mean, I hopped on her. I walked straight up to her and was like, "I would love if you would consider sponsoring me." She, you know, asked me how long I had been sober for, and we met there. You know, our first initial meeting, she wanted me to prove to her, to convince her that I was an alcoholic. Well, it didn't take long for me to convince her. She is, I'd say, top three blessings I've ever had in my life. She set the bar so high with sponsoring. it's not as if she had a super long amount of time sober herself. When I say that she hit the ground running with me and did not, there was no resting on our laurels at all. And she was serious. You can tell she cared about me. I could tell she cared about me and that she wanted me to stay sober. I looked up to her so much just as a person, just with the few times that I had heard her share. I knew that she was going to have a big part of keeping me sober and helping me get sober. I'm Jewish, and I've always believed in God, and I had always felt close to God, but God was definitely on the back burner my whole life. I prayed to God for things that were convenient for me, and that when I look back, sometimes it makes me sick to think about the things that I prayed for and got mad at God for not granting my prayer. But working the steps with my sponsor, I remember for the third step, and she was like, what I like to do is I like to take my sponsees to like a special place that of their choosing. I want you to recite the third step prayer at that place, and you know, we'll have like a little meeting together. And we did. I remember saying it, and I think I fumbled a little bit, and you know, she didn't blink twice about it, but after I said it, she made me say it again. And I think she might have even had me say it a third time, but she wanted me to know that, like, by saying this prayer, it's not just words. Like, you really have to mean it. You have to want it in order for that prayer to mean anything. It did. I mean, I walked away that day and I was like exhausted, like kind of like how I felt after, you know, I made my resentment list. Like it was like I had all of the energy taken out of me, and it was a profound day. And Liz, my sponsor, was adamant on meeting once a week. It wasn't like we rushed through the steps at all. We read, I read, she read, I read, she read. We would pause. She would ask me, what does that mean to you? What out of what we just read resonates with you? What have you taken out of that? You know, she wanted me to work my ass off, you know, like, she wanted me to realize that, like, this is no joke. Like, you know, this is something that is a daily reprieve. It's something that you're going to have to take seriously for the rest of your life, and the work never stops. So not only does the work never stop, but as long as we're doing these steps, we are going to make sure that we are doing them thoroughly and that you are understanding what each of these steps really mean, and that we are not moving forward until you have that, I have, you know, really taken it all in. I think we went over the 11th step, like, no joke, for like 4 months. And like, and she even warned me, like, this is my favorite step. Like, we're like, this is a very important one. And it was to her. And since it was important to her, it was important to me. And I didn't mind that we were reading the same shit, like, every single time we met up. It didn't bother me. I knew that there was a reason for it. I knew that it was important, obviously, to her, and so it was important to me. When we were on, you know, step, you know, going, reading on over step 12, she'd be like, let's go, you know, back to step 11. And I got married while I was doing my steps. And I, of course, we've all heard that the best idea to make such, like, big life decisions, serious life decisions, when you're early on in sobriety. It wasn't as if my sponsor told me to not do it. She just wanted me to think long and hard about it. And I was like, uh-huh, yeah, yeah, okay, so, like, I'm going to get married. When I told my sponsor that I wanted to have a baby, she was like, what? Like, you are doing it all wrong, Nicole. But in some way wanted to prove to her that I was still able to take on all of this stuff and still maintain sobriety, which, as of today, I still have. I had my baby. He is almost 16 months. He's almost 15 months old. I think during my pregnancy was the most that I had ever wanted to drink for numerous reasons. But, like, it's crazy to even say that. Like, you know, it's like you'd think that you wouldn't, but I think everybody in here probably could understand why. But I didn't. I did not pick up a drink. But after I had my boy, Daniel, I was not able, obviously, to go to as many meetings as I would have liked. I mean, I didn't go to one meeting for 10 months, which is a long time, especially early in sobriety, to go without going to a meeting. And for the longest, I would be in these rooms before I had him, and I would be like, I would even share this, like right after somebody would be like, you know, just keep on coming back, like, you know, like just keep on, and like I would be like, I'd raise my hand and I'd be like, I really don't think that meetings like keep me sober. And like, I genuinely didn't at the time, but then I stopped going to meetings and my character defects started to, I mean, I like, the only way that I can describe it is like, if you guys have seen The Shining, when Jack Nicholson is breaking down the door and he yells, "Here's Johnny," like, it's like, here's your character defects. Like, it was exactly like that. And it, I mean, and I felt it. I mean, I know everybody else felt it around me. I felt it. I mean, it was bad. It was bad, bad. And I'm still suffering from not being able to go to as many meetings as I was going to before. It's hard. It's hard. And this is the reason why they say don't have a baby early on in sobriety. I don't regret it for a second. Going through the steps with my sponsor, and I mean thoroughly going through those steps and completing them, was neck and neck the best experience. I mean, it would have been like next to having my son. It was the best experience of my life. The best decision that I've ever made in my entire life was to quit drinking. And ironically, there is a silver lining, because if I wasn't an alcoholic, then Josh wouldn't have wanted anything to do with me, because nobody would really want to, you know, nobody was going to be able to keep up with him, and he wanted a lifestyle that he wanted to live, and I was willing to be with him while he lived that lifestyle. And I would not have, I don't think that I would have quit drinking. I'm almost certain of that I wouldn't have quit drinking as when I did. And I wouldn't have ever gotten married, and I wouldn't have had my baby if I wasn't an alcoholic. So there is something to be said for that, and I am a grateful alcoholic, 100%. I was on a road to nowhere. I knew that. I was not living up to even half of my potential. I'm a smart, funny girl and cute, but that wasn't going to take me where I needed to go. And I'm still not where I need to be in any way, but I'm sure as fuck farther along than I would have been if I decided to keep drinking. My relationship with God is stronger than it ever has been. And that is because of this fellowship, and because of my sponsor, and because of the steps, and because those words in that book made me realize that there is absolutely no way that I would have been able to stop drinking without God. God is my higher power. If he's not yours, I don't give a shit who your higher power is. As long as it stops you from drinking, you know, let it be this thing, let it be your higher power. I mean, who cares? But for me, it is God. And there are really no words to describe what a difference quitting drinking has made. And I wouldn't be able to be the mother that I am if I continued to drink. I wouldn't be able to be the wife, the daughter, the sister, the aunt, none of it, if it weren't for quitting alcohol and making just wiser decisions in general. I don't speak to my sponsor as much as I should. I've told her she's like, you know, like a free therapist, you know? And I know that sometimes she's like, oh yeah, yeah, like this stuff again, Nicole, like when are you going to learn? But she has always been there for me when I need her, and she has changed my life more so than most people in my life. And if there is anybody new in this room tonight, and if you don't have a sponsor, I highly recommend finding one. And I highly recommend going through the steps and taking them seriously. Because that's what it's all about. And if you really want this to work and you really want your life to be awesome, then you will do it. But again, you know, you got to be ready, and there's no point in doing it if you're not. So tonight when I walked in, this girl came up to me and, you know, like complimented my outfit or something and introduced herself to me and then came back up to me and asked me if I was, you know, a sponsor. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is the first time that anybody's ever asked me that. And I said to her, well, my sponsor has told me, I mean, right when I finished the 12 steps, she's like, all right, now you find, no. And I was like, whoa, hold on a second. Like, I'm pregnant. Like I cannot take, what? Like, there's no way. But I think I am ready. And I think that it is totally God that she came up to me tonight. And it is to the thought of being a sponsor is like, oh my gosh, like I'm a big girl now. And it would help me as much as it would help her, for sure. All I do know is that my sponsor has set the bar so freaking high that, like, I mean, if I am even half the sponsor that she was, then I will make a great impact on this girl's life. And that is awesome. I can't say it enough how thankful I am for this fellowship and for this program, because in every way possible, it has changed my life for the better. And I am actually able to say that I think that I am making people proud. And I never was able to say that before. I feel like I'm making God proud. I feel like I'm making myself proud. I feel like I'm making my son proud, my husband proud, my parents proud. And I never was able to say that. And sure, my parents would say to me, oh, I'm proud of you. Of course I'm proud of you. And I'm sure they were in a way. I think now they really mean it. I feel like they should be proud of me. To be able to say that is the biggest blessing. And I just can't say enough how thankful I am for the program and that I hope you guys were not bored, and I hope that there was some sort of strength and hope that you've gotten out of this. And thank you guys for being here.
We really appreciate your words this evening. Thank you so very much.
First I slept, and then I crept to a hope-filled dream. You rescued me, and finally, waking there I see. Look into love's window for a soul that's meant for me. takes me where the promise all is. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slow, we get just what we need. On a broad highway, stride for stride, we walk eternally. Look into love's window, for a heart it beats for me. Takes me where the promises are real.